Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. We are on the air now.
Blog Talk Radio.
Are we ready to go on? Okay, fine. Kay Thompson here. I'm for Kay Thompson Live. Hi, Eric.
I'm Eric Payne. Kay Thompson Live.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we have a full house, right now, full
right.
show, because we have a lot to cover.
Right.
You know, for instance, a lot of the hot topics. And I want to mention, too, you know, Ruben's Restaurant,
right.
Lottie's,
Bogies.
And Bogies. Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah,
Bogies.
A lot going on.
I'm sorry, I got a lot of things here, so you go ahead.
I see.
Do what you do for a minute. Yeah, we are sponsored by Bogies Restaurant, East Orange, New Jersey, 527, what is it? What is it there? 527 Wayne Street, East Orange, New Jersey, as well as being sponsored by Bonnie's Kitchen, West Kennedy Street in North New Jersey.
Right, right.
Really great places to eat. We want to go check them out. Thanks to them for being our sponsors. And today's the Wednesday the 15th, and Kay has
Everything.
Some things she wants to discuss.
Yeah, lots of things.
Okay.
Well, with Vonda's Kitchen, you know, I've got to tell people that she does Southern comfort, you know, with her food. You know, and she has such great, great things. She has, for instance, jambalaya. Did you know that?
Right.
And shrimp and grits.
Right, right, right.
My God, I'm getting caught, you know, hungry already.
Yeah.
Also, now, she is located at 183 West Kinney Street in New York, and that's right off of High Street.
That's,
so
yeah,
you need
yeah,
to get
yeah,
there, yeah.
yeah.
Especially with everything going on downtown Newark and, you know, every place else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ruben's, he's located at 527 William Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he opened up his restaurant and the lounge, Lottie's restaurant and Bogie's restaurant.
That's good.
You know, and lounge and a lot of dancing in Bogie's now, you know.
Yes, there is.
I'm telling you. A lot of good food there also.
Right.
You know, can we go there for breakfast tomorrow or something?
Sure, why not? Let's go.
My
Let's
son?
Go there. You have something you want to discuss? You want to get some hot topics here, okay?
Yeah.
Let's move right into the hot
Right,
topics
because
here.
We're waiting for, you know, Soul Circus, you know, for Denise Howard to call in. She's going to be calling in. She's the lady with Soul Circus. So as soon as she calls
and,
in, everybody should let us
what,
know.
Why don't you tell us what Soul Circus
is? Soul Circus is Soul Circus.
Uh-huh.
You know, African-American circus, and we're going to be, you know, we used to... As a matter of fact, years ago, when they first came to New York, you know, we were, I forget where they had opened up, but it was so exciting because they had the elephants, they had other animals, they had all kinds of different things and wonderful things, and the music, you know, was so good. I remember one time, you know, I had to be like the ringmaster with someone else, and we had to sit in these little, it's a smaller circus than, you know, like Barnum & Bailey or something like that, but still it was very exciting. And the elephants were going back and forth with their trunks, and we had to lean back because
right.
we were that close, you know, to the soul circus, you know, that round circus, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it was really big fun. They also came to Newark. They also came to Newark around, God, in about apartments on, I think, on High Street in Newark, you know. So really big fun. We're also going to be talking to Larry Hazard.
Mm-hmm.
You know who Larry Hazard is?
Mm-hmm.
Referee. For Muhammad Ali and everybody else, I want to talk to him about Mayweather.
Boxing, professional boxing referee,
yeah, yeah.
Has worked in some of the best fights in history.
Yeah,
Larry Hazard, legendary referee.
Yeah, everybody knows him.
Uh huh.
Uh huh. We also have a political update. What's going on in Congress?
That's right.
Will the congressman be going in or what?
We'll see. I know that they were, you know, very busy down there. And,
Let's hope.
Maybe they had a deal, maybe they didn't, but hopefully we'll see if he calls in and be able to give us an update on the latest that's been going on.
Yeah, we need to hear that. And also, you know, I can never figure out why people have been against Barack Obama and Obamacare, Obama health care. You know,
you can never
people
figure out why?
Yeah, because the fact that, I mean, you know, people have been asking, you know, some of the reporters were asking people on the street, and they say, well, do you want affordable health care? And they said, well, yeah, that sounds really good, but we don't like Obama health care.
Right, right. Well, that shows how some people are...
Stupid, right?
...just aren't very literate as to what is the...
They're both the same.
They're both the same program.
Yeah.
That's right. So a lot of people don't even know the issues. They just have an opinion before they know the facts,
yeah.
unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And they look for the prejudice is getting away.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Eric, I want to talk to, you know, what's going down, what's going on at New Jersey PAC. I want to talk about, you know, the whole jazz thing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many things with the James Moody Democracy Jazz Festival. That starts on November 4th.
So the name of this festival is the Democracy Jazz Festival?
James Moody, Democracy of Jazz Festival.
James Moody.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I understand that's the idea of the new executive director down there, John Schreiber. You know, because he's a jazz aficionado or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to have to, you know, take a break in it very shortly. But just to let people know some of the things that are going on down there, the Temptations are going to be coming down there.
Right.
They're going to be coming in to Prudential Hall, right? The big, Paul Robeson, remember? That's on November 3rd, and that's with Kevin Miner. Kevin is a friend, and I've been saying that we're going to have him on because he's a fantastic, you know, singer.
Uh-huh.
Also, Al Jarreau.
So are you just randomly throwing these out, or are you giving
yeah.
them...
I'm giving them a plug.
Are you giving them a plug in the order that they're going to be put?
Yeah, I'm giving them a big plug.
Right.
Yeah.
My question was, are they in the order that you're going to let people know
yes.
when the shows may be
taking Actually, yes, we're going to be doing that starting mm-hmm. next week in all probability.
I
but
see.
There's so many things. Also, so I was talking to Darthon Kirk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, she has her place at the Darthon Kirk Jazz Brunch at Nico's down there. Mm-hmm. So we want her mm-hmm. to let people know about that. Also, Jazz Vespers at Bethany Baptist Church. So many things are going on in New York. People really don't understand what's going on in downtown.
The
sure
most importantly, one of the probably most important things today that there was the election today, the
yeah.
senatorial election. Cory Booker and I think his name is Lonergan, maybe your first name, Steve
oh, God,
Lonergan,
yeah.
running for the empty seat.
Mm-hmm.
Senatorial seat vacated by the death of Senator Frank Lawton Burke.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think Cory is a shoo-in, so we'll see if
he
did win today and get the latest update
yeah.
on the news. Polls are probably still open here in Jersey. They don't close usually until about 8 o'clock, I guess. So I guess any type of accurate numbers wouldn't come in until later on this evening. But
yeah.
we'll probably have an idea that maybe Cory Booker probably did win.
Yeah. Well, you know, also I forgot to tell people, too, Gina Payne Scott is going to be calling in from Bermuda.
Uh-huh.
She is back from London, England, and she's going to give us a report on, you know, what that's like.
Okay.
You know, because she's
fresh
going to
from
leave.
London. Fresh from England.
England.
From England is the country. London
yeah.
is the city.
Yeah.
Yes.
So all that, mm-hmm. you know, it's amazing. Somebody called Congress. The Congressional Comedy Central. Who was that?
I don't know. Do you remember where?
I heard it on television. I don't know. We have a few minutes before break time, you know. But anyway, we have a lot to talk about. An awful lot. Larry Hazard. Maybe we should get him on the phone real fast. Longer. We have 8 minutes to break. So what is the time? You know, we are still waiting for Denise to call. You know, Soul Circus. Have you ever seen Soul Circus?
I've never been to this. It's the Universal Circus.
Universal Circus.
What kind of circus?
It is African American and other people.
Uh-huh.
You know, they had a couple of acts from Africa. I remember. Actually, I haven't seen them in a couple of years now.
But the main premise is that it's
African American circus.
Yeah.
And really exciting. You know, the people in the aerobics people in the aerial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And I want to see it again. You know, we did like a circus.
Right.
You all did also, you
right,
know.
Right.
And then in talking to Larry Hazard, you know, I was very fascinated. I'm fascinated with boxing anyway. And I wanted to ask him about the money that Mayweather is his name.
Well, I mean, he would be a good person to get. Yes.
Mayweather
is making him the highest paid athlete in the world and probably the highest paid boxer ever.
Ever.
I'd be interested to hear Larry Hazard's assessment about the money being made now in boxing. I guess maybe Floyd's the only one making that type of money, but you know, from what he's seen along his way in being a boxing referee, how the amount of money that's being paid out to some of these fighters, how that's changed during the course of his career. I'd be interested to hear his opinion.
They've been saying that he is the highest paid sports figure in the world.
You're talking about Floyd.
Floyd Mayweather, yes. Okay. Is that true? Well, people should know this.
I don't know. I've heard that, that too, so that's statistic. That's
yeah, we can ask, Larry Hazard about that. So, Darth Ann Kirk, I told you about her brunch, 11 to 1, jazz brunch. You know, she's the first lady of jazz in the whole metropolitan area. She's been around a long time.
Right.
And she has so many other different jobs, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And she also works for WBGO. She is really the first lady of jazz in the New Jersey, New York metropolitan area.
Right.
So, and with jazz vespers at Bethany Baptist Church, you know, that is such a great thing. I haven't been there yet, and I keep saying that I'm going. But it's generally on a Saturday, and I have the figures around here somewhere. 11 to 1 on, Darth Ann Kirk Jazz Brunch at Nico's is 11 to 1 p.m., and that's starting up very soon, and we're going to be finding out about that.
Yes.
And then, Eric, we've been talking to a lot of people from, the islands. So we're going to be doing, as we are right now, doing a Caribbean initiative. So we're going to be talking about Antigua. We're going to be talking to the former ambassador, Lionel Hurst, in Antigua. And our contact source is Al Jackson, who was with me and a number of other people over there at WLIB, BLS. And I was on the WLIB side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the men there took me seriously. Because after Judy Simmons left, I was just about the only woman. On for a while.
You were on the WLIB side.
On the WLIB side.
Yeah.
Did a few things on WBLS, but that was mainly the music thing.
Right.
With Vaughn Harper.
Right.
That group.
Right.
Jerry Bledsoe and a number of other people.
Okay.
And, of course, Gary Bird was over there on WLIB, and we did have fun, and we gave out a lot of information.
I'm trying to get online, just so you guys could know, maybe you could, let me know the password and stuff like that while we're trying to bring you the latest updates on the news. I'm just curious about whether those Republicans have come to their senses. Some of them, they were able to get a deal on the shutdown and people could go back to work, and the deficit crisis has been averted, because we've been seeing how a lot of these Tea Party extremists, Republican extremists have really pushed things to the brink of almost disaster. A lot of people are suffering. A lot of people haven't gotten their checks. So a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. And just to have individuals that are willing to put somebody else's livelihood on the line, that's the whole funny thing about it. A lot of folks want to make points and they want to have a political ideology. But a lot of the people that they asked to make the biggest sacrifice, so to speak, are the average person who's dependent on, government checks or disability checks or Social Security checks or unemployment checks.
Yeah.
And usually what happens with a lot of these, these Tea Party folks, at least these guys in office, they're all gung-ho about other people's livelihoods, and when it's not their paycheck that might be held up next week. So that's always it's always interesting to me to see how extreme and passionate some people are when they really don't have to bear the consequences of their passion. It's interesting to see who's really walking like they're talking and who's really just trying to score points or just really can't stand the nation.
Yeah.
But there's a different type of person in the White House nowadays. Even though no matter how good they might be doing or how many benefits might come out of it to people who have been traditionally left out of society.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. So hopefully we can get back up online here and I can get the latest on what's going on down in Washington. Certainly from maybe perhaps Congressman Payne.
Yeah. I also want to, get to Larry Hazard. I'm quite sure he's standing by. And I think we have his name on that sheet. Yeah, if we can call him. We're going to break in 1 minute. Okay, then we'll do it right after that. Also, I have to get out there in the main area to find my iPad. I think I left it out there.
Yeah, no. Well,
okay, thank you. What?
Okay, we can find the iPad. I don't know if that's part of the show, ladies and gentlemen.
That's
she
part
left
of
the
show.
iPad.
Bring
the,
on the, I don't care.
Which really
I don't care.
She doesn't
bring
remember
on
that she gave it to me a while ago.
Hold on to
all
that. Right. That's a whole other story.
Oh, okay.
And here comes our break. That will come
thank
up once
goodness.
You stay with us.
Thank okay. Be right back, everyone.
Is you looking for good eating? Then stay beating the path to the network with the best. Who rap will hook you up fast. They keep it crispy with the 411. They keeping you right, chopping it up, dishing it out. It's tasting good, but don't bite. The recipes are sublime and info fresh off the vine. They keep you GMO free, cause V, you are what you eat. Now if you too busy chewing on the FAQ fat wag, tune into the F to the O to the O to D food rap. Listen to the kitchen on the show with the utmost. We need me and Shauna G, your flying T chef. Oh,
food rap, food rap, food rap.
It's time to eat better. I know you feel the pressure. Can I get a yes, yes, sir? A yes, yes, sir. A for the hot show on the block. From the street to the hood. Keep it locked. Funky rap and talk. Never taste it so good.
Oh, yeah, delicious. Pizzas, hamburgers, and french fries. Oh, yeah. All the fast food I can eat. Oh, no, I can't have that. Oh, no. I'm hungry. I hear my stomach growling. It's food rap.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Okay, and we're back. I'm Kay Thompson here at Kay Thompson Live.
And I'm Eric Payne. And Kay, we have a
caller on the line.
We have a caller. One caller.
Yes. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Hello. This is Gina Payne. Payne calling in from Bermuda.
Hi, Gina. Hi. Hey. How are you?
I'm good. I am anxiously awaiting to see what's happening in New Jersey with the Senate election, the special election to fill in for Senator Lautenberg. So I've been kind of paying attention to that today, and I'm just hoping that because it is Tuesday, it's Wednesday, and not regular election day of Tuesday, that people really got out the vote.
Yeah.
I do understand that that Corey was in the lead before the polls opened due to absentee ballots from three different counties, but we don't know, as we say, you know, it's not over till the last vote is counted. So, you know, I heard you, Eric, say that, you know, he's supposed to be a shoo-in, and, you know, probably, hopefully that's right, but not over till the last vote is counted, so we shall see.
Are the people, are the people in Bermuda very interested in Jersey politics?
Yeah, only because New Jersey, we have, a big personality in terms of our governor, so just like every place else. Well, you know, I know you mentioned that I was in England. When I was in England, I actually met people from Texas, and I was joking about their governor, who I was not sure if he, not being funny, not trying to be politically incorrect, but I was not really not sure if he has a, if he's a special person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth, and we kind of laughed about that, and they said, yeah, well, what about your governor in New Jersey? You know, they're from Texas, like I said. So, people are interested because, you know, even though New Jersey is such a small state, A, we're in close proximity here in Bermuda to New Jersey. We're only an hour, Bermuda is only 1 hour and 40 minutes outside of, New Jersey and by flight, of course. And so they're interested like that, but it's not the topic of conversation. Bermuda is very much interested into Bermuda politics. And before U.S. politics, unless it has something to do with them financially, they're more interested in U.K. politics or the Caribbean politics when it affects Bermuda. It's all relative.
What about the U.K.? Are the people in England, in London, are they very involved with United States politics?
Now, they would be more so, yeah, because you find people that are, you know, back and forth a lot. They have interests, whether it's, you know, personal, business, or education, or what have you. Just by the simple virtue of the fact that, you know, if they're going to travel someplace, chances of them traveling to Bermuda versus the United States are, you know, them going to the U.S. is even though Bermuda's a British territory, yes, they are definitely very much interested. And they're kind of wondering what's up with the U.S. and all of our crazy politics. You know, why would the government shut itself down, particularly when you have one party who put forth, you know, a lot of the budget, a lot of the issues, a lot of the, you know, the items in the budget, and then not vote on their own budget, you know, and to shut down an entire government based on something as stupid but monumental as not liking the personality of the president and holding the country hostage for, everyone's calling it Obamacare, and it's giving it the stigma. It's called the Affordable Care Act. So I think we need to stop calling it Obamacare, because people are, you know, constantly bashing President Obama. It is the Affordable Care Act. And
is that happening? Is that happening in America? Have you heard anything negative about Obama in the UK?
Yes, you know, just like I said, just what I just said. I think people generally like President Obama in the UK, and they also they see it as a no-brainer, the Affordable Care Act, because in the UK, you remember, they already have universal health care. They don't have to decide whether, if I don't have enough money, you know, if I'm low on cash, am I going to get some groceries or am I going to go to the doctor if I'm sick? They go to the doctor. It's taken care of. And they honestly don't understand what that dilemma is about. If it's being, you know, like if the government has passed it and they're ready, you know, and it's there and available, who on earth in their right mind is going to tell you, no, we don't need to take care of every person and you don't have to pay for it, or, you know, you pay for it hidden in your taxes or however it is. But, yeah, no, there's universal health care in the U.K. And, you know, it makes perfect sense, you know, I mean, to me anyway, it seems like a no-brainer. Other than that, the United Kingdom is an interesting place, being from the East Coast and then having been to the West Coast, my first time in that continent anywhere, I was absolutely, honestly overwhelmed by the amount of people, by the population in the United Kingdom. Literally every country is represented there.
Wow.
In the United Kingdom.
In the UK, in England. I mean, and I was in you know, like several different parts of England, in Leeds, England. England is huge, you know, I mean, England, the United Kingdom is huge. And Leeds, England, which is in the northern part, we're closer to Manchester. Everybody knows Manchester, everybody here anyway, because of the soccer team, Manchester United. And then you've got Bradford, and then you've 3.5 hours away, it's London. So I was able to go to London and Leeds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nina, listen, stay around, and we're going to be pulling you back maybe in a little while. I want to ask you some other things about England and about your visit to the palace. I know you had tea. Talk to you in a little while again, okay?
Because we're going with.
We're going to be talking to Larry Hazard. You know, I think he's on the phone right now. Or let's try to call him. We are calling him right now, and then we're going to be talking some boxing.
Hopefully he feels like talking tonight. And
yeah, he does.
Well, we'll just sound him out.
Yeah. Well, you had a great... I'm dying to find a young fighter making such huge amounts of money.
Correct.
Time you can buy tickets to someplace from $100,000. Hello, Larry. Larry Harrison.
Yes.
Larry, hi. How are you? This is Kay Thompson calling from Kay Thompson Live.
You want to call me on the landline, right?
Yeah. What's
this is my cell phone. No. The 732 number. That's what I was waiting for.
It's okay. It's okay. It's really very clear right now. Okay? Sure. So, and my son Eric is here.
How are you, Mr. Hazard? Yeah, we can talk to you with this line because you're coming in loud and clear.
Yeah.
Talking about
okay, all right. Okay. All right, Eric, how you doing?
All right, sir. We were just talking earlier, and I was telling my mom, I wanted to get your perspective about the amount of money that someone like Money Man Floyd Mayweather, we didn't talk about the most recent fight that he had, but just in the course of your career, the amount of money that has been paid out to boxers from the time that you can remember. Can you give us some perspective about that?
Yeah, I can't. It's kind of hard for me to hear you, Eric. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We can hear you loud and clear. Maybe we can try and get that other number, if that'll be better.
Call me on the landline. Call me on the landline. Okay, you want that number?
You don't want to give it out on the air, I don't think, but I think I have it.
I believe
right here.
Kay does have it. So
number, it's a 732 number. Call me on that note.
Okay. All right. What we'll do is we'll do that right away then.
Okay, we'll try it right back. We're going to call Larry Hazard, legendary boxing referee. And what we're talking about is that he's been around in some of the most historic fights that he's refereed. I'm just going to, none come to mind right now because there are so many. And if you know boxing, you know Larry Hazard's name and involvement in the world of boxing and his impact on the world of boxing.
I'm trying to find that 732 number, and let's see. Well, we're just going to have to play it by ear here because I don't seem to have it in front of me. Is it on your?
And,
here it is right here. That's the other number. We called him on 908.
A lot of people who are real true boxing fans know that Larry Hazard was also the commissioner of the New Jersey Athletic Control Board for quite a while, several years he served there. He was also a boxer himself, called the Glove Champion. And began wrestling fights. And some of the really big fights featuring Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Michael Spinks, Dwight Qualley, you know, just to name it, Buddy McGirt, Pernell Whitaker. So Matthew Saad Muhammad, I mean, he's refereed some really, really big fights. You know, those are big title fights, but even non-title fights. The likes of Ray Boom Boom Man Sr., Alexis Arguello. So, yeah, he's definitely, Tommy Hearns, he's definitely a gentleman that knows and has been around and certainly is in the Boxing Hall of Fame. And he's also a great asset to the state of New Jersey, becoming a New Jersey athletic commissioner, to the state athletic control board. So served as a commissioner on that.
Okay. You know what we're going to have to do? Okay, that's fine. We're going to be talking to Larry in a minute. How much before break? So, okay. So we're going to be getting to Larry in a minute. I don't seem to have that 732 number. I must have misplaced it. But, whenever you talk to him.
There are a lot of things, there are a lot of things that changed about boxing since even the time that he was first involved. Just the way the sport is covered, not only the amounts of money, but just, a long time ago, there was no such thing as cable TV, the internet, stuff like that. Those big fights, some of those really big fights. Muhammad Ali.
Yes?
Yeah.
Hi, Mr. Hazard. Eric Payne here. We're calling you back. We hope that's much better connection. Can you hear us better?
That's much better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Larry, I'm sorry. That was my mistake. I misplaced some of my notes here. But anyway, let's get into this conversation. So tell us about what you think about... What's his name, Floyd Mayweather?
I was interested, as I was saying earlier, just the amount of money, people talk about Floyd Mayweather, I guess, being the largest money-earning athlete in the world, and how he has his business arrangements set up. And I was just wondering, from the time you first started coming into the boxing world to now, the amount of money that is generated for boxers and the event as a whole. Can you comment on just the changes that you've seen?
Well, it's a whole new ball game now, especially with Floyd and his marketing. you know, the marketing of Floyd Mayweather has been astronomical. Just on this last fight alone, you know, they say that he made somewhere in the $40-50 million dollar range.
Wow.
You know, yeah, for that, for his last fight, and well, that, with Canelo Alvarez, you know, and that certainly surpasses all purses to date in boxing history. You know, especially in the modern day, you know, even so much as surpassing, you know, the Ali Frazier one. And all of the others that came behind that, and there's been some tremendous purses, especially during the Mike Tyson era. But this kid has been marketed very, very expertly. He's the most talented. He's the most talented fighter out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I would agree that he's the greatest of all times, but he certainly is the. The best pound for pound during his era.
You know,
me personally, I don't really think, and certainly we can't criticize him for the era in which he's fighting, because I guess he's fighting the best that's out there during his time, but I would question how successful he would be, you know, fighting against some of the greats of the 1980s, like Sugar Ray Leonard,
right.
Tommy Hearns, Roberto Duran, some of those fighters, you know, during those years, the competition to me was much greater, you know. But like I said, you can't blame the fighter for the era in which he, you know, he's competing, and you know, Floyd is fighting, in my opinion, the best competition that's out there. So you have to give him credit for that.
He's just so far ahead of the competition, what you're saying, right? Or there's no real...
Well, you know, he he's very skillful. And the one thing about him that, you know, you can't really say about a lot of fighters, even going back some of the generations, he stays in shape all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, one thing about the fight game fighters, you know, when they have the skill, the technical skill, and they stay in condition, he doesn't really have to struggle to make weight, you know,
right.
Which is really one of the main drawbacks for a lot of fighters, you know, for years, the struggle to make weight. Especially during this modern boxing era, you know, with weigh-ins being held, you know, 12 and 15 hours before the fight and all. You know, when you sometimes you think you're looking at a welterweight fight, but you're actually watching light heavyweights, you know, by the time these guys get in the ring, you know. So a lot of the purity in terms of weight classification has been lost through these weigh-ins and the time periods in which they're held, and the habits, you know, the bad habits that fighters have now as it relates to their weights. But Floyd Mayweather is kind of like a throwback to the old days. He's always, he walks around, you know, only maybe a pound or two above his fighting weight. So, you know, you never catch him, you know, out of shape, so to speak,
right.
And that's a big plus for him, and that coupled with his tremendous ring knowledge, you know, what I call ring IQ, he figures out a way to win, you know, and that's a rarity among fighters from any era, and only that's something that the great ones have been blessed with. You know, Muhammad Ali, you know, no matter who was in front of Ali, Ali seemed like he could figure out a way to come out victorious. Sugar Ray Leonard, he was another one. All of the great ones, you know, even going back to my idol, Sugar Ray Robinson, that's what made him so great. and he would figure out during the fight, he'd figure out the way to win. You know, he might have some difficulty in the early rounds, but by the time that fight was over, you know, he'd have his opponent all figured out, and it would be easy sailing for him. Mm-hmm. And Floyd Mayweather has that characteristic. You know, he's been blessed with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really don't see anybody around right now.
Well, Larry, let me ask you something. What do you think, you know, before we go to a break, what do you think about female boxers? Are there any, you know, female boxers worth talking about? You're probably all feeling insulted right now when I say worth.
I sanctioned a lot of female, you know, female boxing really got its start during the 70s and 80s. And in New Jersey, when I was a commissioner,
mm-hmm.
you know, we sanctioned it. But I never really had that much enthusiasm for female boxing.
Whoa.
You know, female fighters, you know, they just never really seem to have caught on, you know, with the fans
right.
like the men boxing.
Right.
You know, Layla Ali, Jackie Frazier, because mm-hmm. of their fathers, you know, reputations, drew some interest. And then there was that other young girl that Don King was promoting. I can't even remember her name, but she was called Christy Martin.
Right.
You know, she got a lot of television exposure back in the 80s, 90s, or whenever. And
uh-huh.
that kind of propelled female boxing
uh-huh.
To the forefront. But it never has reached the level that their male counterparts, you know, and rightfully so, I guess, because,
and we're gonna,
you know, boxing, the sweet science has always been a male-dominated sport.
And let's hold it right there, as you said that, until we come on the other side of the break. When we come back from the break after, we're going to wrap up talking with Larry Hazard, but we're also going to talk with Ken Whittingham, TV director of a lot of top Emmy Award-winning
mm-hmm.
shows. We'll come back on the other side of the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back to K Thompson Live. I'm Eric Payne, your co-host on K Thompson Live. We want to remind everybody that we're sponsored by Vonda's Kitchen. A lot of good soul food, comfort, healthy soul food at Vonda's Kitchen. It's located 183 West Canny Street, North New Jersey. You can go there from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and get your grub on.
Getting hungry, yeah, yeah.
Get your grub on at Vonda's Kitchen. It's got comfort soul food. It's comfort food or comfort soul food. Either way, you're going to get some good eating down there. Also, we're also sponsored by Bogey's Lounge in East Orange, New Jersey, 527 Williams Street. Bogey's Lounge is back open. All you people used to hang out at Bogey's back in the day. You know who I'm talking about. You know who you are. It's back open again. Excuse me. It's remodeled, redesigned, and you need to check it out. Also, they got Lottie's Restaurant inside there, Bogey's Lounge. Go check them out because they are putting it down. You can get your grub on. You can work off the weight by dancing. Do whatever you want over there. So back to Mr. Larry Hazard. Then we're going to go talk to Ken Whittingham, but Mr. Larry Hazard. So what do you think would have been a fight with Floyd, since we're on the subject, we'll stick with Floyd and Manny Pacquiao? Who do you think would have prevailed had that fight taken place?
I don't really know, Eric. I would like to think that Floyd probably would have won, but
mm-hmm.
because of Floyd's reluctance to agree to fight Manny Pacquiao, I often wonder if Floyd really had the level of confidence where he himself thinks that he could beat Manny Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that they did a great disservice to the sport of boxing when they didn't fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when both of them were really hot. You know,
right.
Because once Manny Pacquiao lost, you know, the fight with him and Floyd, the enthusiasm for him and Floyd kind of lost its edge, you know, and the longer it went without them signing to fight, the interest seemed to wane in the fight, and it just lost its flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they did a great disservice to the boxing industry and to boxing fans, because the anticipation of those two fighters meeting each other at one point was at a fever pitch,
right,
similar to that of the Ali Frazier 1 fight, if
right,
you can remember back in 71, when everybody was anticipating that fight. I mean, that they closed down New York for
right,
that one. I mean, that was like the fight of the century. And never before, you know, never since that particular fight was there ever such a greatly anticipated meeting that never took place.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I believe that they probably could generate mm-hmm. some interest, a great level of interest in them fighting even now, because it just seems like there's no one else around for them, even though Pacquiao has been knocked out by Timothy Bradley. You
right.
know, I still think that there still could be a great level of interest just to see who would win.
Well, there it is. Mr. Hazard, we want to thank you.
I have one question. Okay,
because we want to get
one fast question, Larry. What do you think about Ultimate Fighting?
Ultimate Fighting, I mean, it has its own following.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly,
like
I'm not a great fan of there's too much wrestling. You know, it's more like wrestling, a lot of ground fighting. You know,
right.
I've studied the martial arts for many years, and it's not even martial arts in its purest form. You know,
right.
self-defense. A lot of wrestling and, you know, a lot of the other, you know, it's just too close to wrestling, but it seems to be very exciting. It has a great following, and it's holding its own, but I don't think boxing has anything to fear, you
okay.
know, in terms of competition from Ultimate Fighting.
All right, well, there it is. Thank you, Mr. Hazard. There's the opinion of everybody from someone who knows for sure.
That's right.
And if the promoters are listening, they can still get that fight going on with Manny Pacquiao.
And we will talk to you again. Sorry, I really enjoyed it. I don't know anything about boxing.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Hazard.
Bye now.
Take care.
Thank you.
We're going to switch little gears. Still entertainment business. My man Ken Whittingham is on the line. Ken Whittingham is a TV director. Ken has directed. He was one of the best TV directors, period. Just period. There's no African-American, and there's no cause. There's no nothing. He's one of the best TV directors out there. Directed shows like Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock, what else? The Middle, Parenthood, The Office, Entourage, Scrubs, Desperate Housewives. So, Ken, my name is Earl. Ken is, when you look at his resume and his track record, he's an award-winning television director. Welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show, Ken Whittingham.
Why?
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on tonight.
And he's also a good friend and in town directing an episode of the new Michael J. Fox show, right, Ken?
Wow.
Just happened to be
yeah,
in town.
Yeah,
hello,
yeah.
Hello, Mr.
Whittingham.
Yep. Hello to my mom now,
hello.
Ken.
Hey, Miles, how you doing? How are you? Thanks for having me on the show tonight. Real honor.
Yeah.
So, Ken, talk about the TV game. You know, you've been doing it for a while. There's a lot of people out there listening to the show and out there that want to know how to get in. But just talk a little bit about your experiences and you know, what you think is happening with TV now. Because, I mean, you've worked on some of the best shows on television, and you've been,
mm-hmm.
Helped to create some of that stuff. So What are your thoughts about that? How did you start out first off?
Well, I started off kind of like at the bottom. You know, you hear all these stories about, oh, I started off in the mailroom. I really started off in the mailroom at CBS. And kind of then I became a page and kind of, you know, was trying to figure it out while I was in college. And then got into, I have a degree in journalism, decided that I wanted to go into the news game and just really didn't like it once I got into it. So I decided to kind of switch reels and try to refigure out what made me happy. And it seemed to me that I was most happiest being around funny people. Mm-hmm. And because when I was a page, I worked on shows like Three's Company and WKRP and All in the Family. And we're going way back. I'm older than you, actually, Eric. So anyway, I worked at all these shows, and I just kind of, I didn't know it, but I actually felt comfortable being in that arena. So I ended up drifting back into it by way of a show called 227 with Marla mm-hmm. Gibbs and Jack Hay, and kind of started all over again as a PA and kind of worked my way up through the comedy ranks. And kind of had to learn, you know, what comedy was about. You know, I knew what journalism was about, but I kind of had to retool myself into a different direction. So, you know, kind of paid my dues in comedy and worked my way up. I was an assistant director, and then when I felt that I was ready to direct, I got an opportunity on a show called Malcolm and Eddie, and that was my first shot to direct. So, that was, you know, kind of a turning point in my career, and now I know I'm being very long-winded. Sorry, but that's kind of, it was a turning point where I really just started directing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. I mean, people need to, you know, people get inspired by your story. So the more they know about the about, you know, how you went about it, achieving your level of success, I think it's going to be more helpful to people. Now, another good question: are there a lot of people that look like you doing the job that you do?
Right.
Not at all. Well, you know, not at all. You know, so my believe it or not, my number one priority every day is to represent people that look like me, and represent us in a very positive way, and letting the industry know that, hey, we can, you know, we do this too, and we do it well.
That's
so
true.
That's number one. That's number one every day that I go in. I have to represent for us, or for African American people, I should say.
Ken, is it right?
Yes.
I'm thinking about, you know, when I was working for Channel 47, you know, and Everett Felder was over there, and he was a director,
mm-hmm.
and he was the only one, in fact, I was the only, I think, black person on, you know, Spanish TV.
Right, at that time.
Yeah,
right, Channel
47. And so he did directing for that and a few other shows.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every book about 3 or 4 different languages.
Right.
But we were in that one niche,
right.
You know, and then with, you know, cable. You know, I met a few directors
right.
there, but I don't remember any.
Even then, that was a long time ago. Even to Ken, flash forward,
yeah.
move forward to your day. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people.
Yeah, the directors that came before me, I can count them on a, you know, on one, maybe two hands, but probably one hand. But the comedy directors that came before me were Al Scott, Garen Keith, Tony mm-hmm. Singletary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and of course, our film directors like Michael Schultz, you know, but it's a very short list, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of Spike Lee kind of re-energized, you know, the black director, but in film, but in TV, it's
mm-hmm.
still, I'm kind of picked up the torch from Tony Singletary and Garen Keith and people like that. But there's really, and then there are other people who are, you know, other African American directors like Eric Seaton, Robbie Countryman, you know, a few other, I'm just talking about TV, not film, just TV
right.
people, Kim Fields, a few other people, but not enough. But then again, I don't feel that they're Regina King's starting to direct TV, mm-hmm. and Millicent Shelton. There are a few.
And these are shows that, you know, a lot of people, millions of people watch every day, and they wouldn't know. And for, you know, for years there was an old thing that a lot of people, I guess people that weren't in the industry, particularly African Americans, figured that just watching a TV show, they don't really know that a lot of times, you know, a lot of the people that are behind the camera are not necessarily African American. Not up until recent years did you have a predominance of African American writers issues and things like that, right? So, even to this day, those are few and far between, so to speak, because a lot of those people, they don't get as much work as you might get on some of the crossover shows, right, Ken?
That's very true. That's very true. I feel very blessed and very, someone told me years ago, they said, you just can't focus on, you know, you focus on comedy. Don't focus on black comedy. Don't focus on white comedy. Just focus on comedy. And so that's kind of been my, you know, what I've kind of always went after. And I know early on, you know, I'd have meetings at NBC and you know, there are the diversity programs and we come in and talk about it. And there was just never a question in my mind that I couldn't direct Frasier or Cheers, and I'm sure in their minds they were like, "Are you crazy? You know, we're not giving these shows out. These are high end shows," and they kind of it was just kind of out of our reach. But for people like Tony Singletary, who directed one of the best sitcoms of all time, which was Bill Cosby's show, you know, really kind of paved the way, kind of took it to another level. I just do what I do and just try to do the best job I can do, because that's all you can do. And luckily, people like what I do, because it, at the end of the day, it's all opinions and art. You know, in art, you know, we all just do what we do, and hopefully somebody likes it.
And you're able to find. Bring out the funny parts, and you have a certain talent for that. Because a lot of people don't know really what, or they really don't have
a director does.
What a TV director. So a TV director kind of, you know, for the lay people out there, the TV director is the one who shapes the picture for you. When you see an actor making a certain movement or walking to the refrigerator, TV director might have helped them find those movements. And also the TV director has to be aware of the camera angles and things like that, so when you are seeing these people move and walk and talk, TV director is responsible for all of that, not just the artistic.
Yeah, exactly, and also the performance of the actor. You know, if an actor says a line and doesn't punctuate a certain word, you know, which makes the joke work, a good director would say, "Hey, don't say it like this, say it like this," you know, or give me a reaction from this line, or they just paint the picture, basically. You know, a director gets a script that a writer has written, you interpret that script, and then you paint the picture, you know, you paint the picture, but you also try to elevate it. How else can I make this funny? By telling the story through cameras, or through performance, or through, you know, reactions, or whatever, because sometimes reactions can be just as funny as a written word. So it's the director's job to, especially in comedy, because in comedy, your job is to evoke laughter. And to evoke laughter is very hard, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that is not funny. So,
we've got 2 minutes to the end of the show. In brief, Ken, my mom asked, how do you do that?
I just want you
to be aware that we have about a minute
to
the end of our show, so give a brief answer, and we can do another part two of this interview. But how do you elicit that?
Okay.
And that's where the talent comes in, having a director who brings that out. But how do you get that out?
Because you got to have a funny bone. You got to be funny yourself. so that, it's very simple as that. It's simple as that. If you're funny, and you know what's funny, and you have a crazy little, sense of humor, hopefully, you bring it to the table and people like it, And that's what I like to think.